change the outlook of the game. We bring in nothing but the best in the sport to break it down. A man that you see all the time on SVP, working with Scott Van Pelt, also co-host of Stanford Steve and the Bear Podcast, Mr. Stanford Steve, making his Monsters of the Midday debut. Thank you so much for the time, sir. How are we doing?
I mean, I don't want to go back in the day, but I remember calling Mr. Rogers for radio shows at ESPN Radio to come join to get a little taste of Oklahoma City. So this is a treat, man. Appreciate you guys having me on for sure.
Unfortunately, we had a mix-up with our guy that goes 9 to noon. He's out, so Mark just left. So you're stuck with me, Stanford Steve, but I'm sure Mark's listening, and I'm sure he appreciates the shout-out. So you're stuck with just me. I've never asked you this, and I love I love the Sports Center with SVP. You guys have one of my absolute favorite shows on TV. Where's the connection? Help me out. Where did you and SVP cross paths? How'd that relationship and that chemistry start?
Back at ESPN Radio in Bristol, Scott started his own show. You know, had him after Dan Patrick left. Scott, you know, was in there with Mike Tirico, and then it formulated into SVP and Russillo. And Russillo and I had worked together doing the College Game Day radio show, traveling around with, you know, the TV Game Day guys, and just built up a relationship with Scott. You know, I always say we bonded because we're game watchers. We're not trying to, you know, get people with social media and clickbait. Like, we watch games and we want to react to games and offer thoughts on when we watch the game. So it's been over 10 years now, and it's great. I mean, we know each other pretty darn well. But it's some that, I mean, you would know, playing, you know, your days and doing what you're doing now. You know, you develop that thing. You know what somebody's going to say, the anticipation, the thinking ahead to what might like or see or anticipate in a broadcast or a radio show. That stuff comes with time and just hanging out off the microphones and out of work also. So it's a long time. There's nothing that replaces that.
It comes through on the television screen loud and clear, man. It is awesome stuff. And Bad Beats, tell me that was your segment, right? You have to take claim for that. Best segment in TV right now.
Man,
I love it.
Scott is, we tried it on radio, and you just couldn't, you know, you could read all the lines and read the game recaps and all that stuff to see, you know, what happened and transpired and give it, but there was no way to translate it to the viewer that could see it and see how, you know, catastrophic some of these beats are. And like I said, I always give Scott credit. He said when we came over from radio to TV, he's like, they said we could do bad beats. We're going to do bad beats. I mean, we knew what it was. It was just a matter of, you know, putting that game plan on tape and getting in front of the camera and doing it. So it was all him. I give him all the credit. He was the one that said we were going to do it. And as a lot of people didn't think we would, we actually did, and we still are. So it's all his.
And anybody who's ever picked games or definitely bet on games, we've all got our stories. So it's always great to see it each and every week. Let's try to break down these games. And I've got to start at the top. You heard me play Nick Saban talking about he doesn't know exactly how it's going to work out. You know, there was a big line movement yesterday. I want to say anywhere from went from 6 to 4.5, maybe even 3.5. Clearly adjusted mightily for Nick Saban not potentially being there. How does that factor in for you, how you handicap this game? Would you lean towards, with no Nick Saban, does that make you go towards Georgia, or it doesn't change your overall outlook of this game with him potentially not being there?
It's tough, Dusty. I've been going back and forth with it. I mean, there's nobody in the sport like Saban. If you go to an Alabama game, he's the first guy out there checking special teams. He's the guy looking at the other team's kicker. He's looking at his kicker. He's micromanaging every single thing. You see him going up to his special teams coach pregame. Hey, you know, I think we got to do this and this. And, you know, fourth down decisions or, you know, your offensive coordinator. I guarantee every time that Bama gets the ball, Sark knows in his head, all right, you know, are we in four down territory, coach? Like, Saban already relays that. So when it comes to the decision-making process, there's nobody like him in the store. It's a very critical thing. And then last night he talked about watching practice from home on the wide view, and he's like, wow, I could, you know, actually see a lot more of practice rather than being on the field. But then, you know, so say he's not going to be there. He has the largest staff in the sport. You go to a game, you look up in the press box, he's got 18, I think he calls them assist, you know, just offensive or defensive assistants. He's got former head coaches. You know, he said Sark's going to be in charge. He's got, I mean, Butch Davis is still on that staff. So he's got guys that have head coaching experience. He's had guys that coach for over 20 years. So when it comes down to it, I think it's more about Bama, the players, getting themselves ready to go. I think Ole Miss is a pain in the butt, is going to be a pain in the butt for every single team in that conference, just knowing how Lane goes about offensive game planning. So to me, it's definitely worth a couple points in the spread, but I also think Alabama is going to be a lot better on the defensive side this week, knowing that Georgia's not going to do what Ole Miss did last week, if that makes any sense.
Makes total sense, and I completely agree with you on that. I think that's the side of the ball we look at. We're going to be enamored with the Bama offense, Georgia defense, but it's the other side, and I expect a much better showing from Alabama's defense against Stetson Bennett the fourth. What about a game, I'll tell you, that I've already kind of had my eye on. I had South Carolina, Florida a few weeks ago. Auburn, South Carolina. It's in Columbia, South Carolina. Auburn's a 3 to 3.5 point favorite. Tell me why I shouldn't jump on the Gamecocks catching over a field goal. And I think Auburn should be 1-2, and I could easily make the case South Carolina could be 2-1 because, you know, if it weren't for a fumble off the leg, maybe they beat Tennessee in that SEC opener. How do you handicap that? Do you expect a bounce back from Auburn, or is this a winnable game for Will Muschamp in South Carolina?
I think it's definitely winnable for Muschamp. I'm getting crushed last night because I said Coastal – I've been saying for 3 weeks Coastal Carolina should be ranked. And when I look at the rankings, Bear and I on our podcast 2 weeks ago – before LSU lost to Missouri, I was pretty strong in feeling that there's no LSU moved up three spots after they beat Vanderbilt. They moved up after that, and you know it's just something I think I just you know the eye test, like LSU wasn't there, and then we saw it last week. I mean they have more talent than Missouri, and it sure didn't look like that. That I mean Eli Drinkwitz could scheme it up with the best of them, and I know LSU's got problems on defense, but I just didn't think LSU was worthy. And then I go to Auburn. Like I watched Auburn the last couple of weeks. I'm not impressed. I thought they would be a lot better offensively. I know the breakdown Herb Street did, you know, in the Georgia game about Bo Nix leaving a clean pocket is still making its runs. I still think he looks antsy. He doesn't trust his guys up front. I was expecting more. I mean, you watch Schwartz for Auburn. How don't you want to get that kid the ball in his hands 15 times a game? He's an absolute game changer. And I just haven't seen that consistency from Auburn. Now, I will go on the other side and say how impressed I was with Arkansas in that game last week. I didn't feel like Auburn should have any business given 14 points. And sure enough, I think Arkansas, we know how that played out and should have won the game. But, yeah, I mean, you could make the case for South Carolina. They showed some heart, you know, staying in the game at the Swamp. And then last week coming back with it. So, you know, I always like Will as a head coach. I know, you know, fan bases don't like him. I think he brings it every week. It's just a matter of translating and getting the recruits to play. Had a tough break with losing the running back this year. But I always think South Carolina teams are going to be prepared for the situation that comes every week.
Talking with Stanford Steve of SportsCenter with SVP. Fantastic show that I'm sure you're watching each and every night. Also has a great podcast. He co-hosts Stanford Steve and the Bear Podcast. I would put it right up there with anybody if you're looking to take yourself into the college football weekend handicapping games. You mentioned Arkansas. I'm glad because that's the next game I wanted to go to. This Ole Miss offense is phenomenal. Good buddy of mine is the OC and Jeff Lebby. He is making a name for himself under Lane Kiffin right now. But their defense is equally as bad. And I think Sam Pittman, you could make the case, though they're at 1-2, they've shown more signs of improvement than just about any first-year head coach in the SEC. Fascinating game in Fayetteville. Ole Miss, a two-point favorite. How do you handicap this, Steve?
First of all, Coach Libby, I don't think he gets enough credit because he's the one calling the plays. Everybody's saying that Lane's calling the plays. Let's get Coach Libby a little shout there, all right? I think Arkansas is easily the most improved team in the country. And saying that, I don't think Felipe Franks has played well. And I'm starting to think if we've seen the best from Felipe, because if we haven't, then they could take another gear with Coach Browse in that offensive system. So this is I don't want anything to do with this game. I don't know how Ole Miss is going to come off of the physical nature of playing Alabama. I mean, they played a marathon last week, you know, and went toe-to-toe with Bama. It's really hard to get back up. I can't imagine what their defense is going through. You would think Arkansas would have the nod when they have the ball in their hands against this Ole Miss defense who's just gotten gashed nonstop in every game they've played. But, you know, Ole Miss is going to bring it. I thought David Pollack made a great point on the College Football Live yesterday and saying he thinks Corral, the Ole Miss quarterback, is the toughest game plan there is in the league. With what he could do with his arm and what he could do with his legs and what, you know, Ole Miss does without formationing and stuff like that. So good luck to Arkansas. Barry Odom's been awesome in what they've done on the defensive side. So it's a stay-away game for me. I'm really interested to see how it plays out, though.
Totally agree with that. Okay, here's one that I kind of like. So shoot me down. We make our picks tomorrow. And I'm on a little bit of a heater, so I just want to keep this thing going. and this looks dumb, I know. Because Louisville, I love Scott Satterfield, thought he turned around last year, and they're sitting here 0-3 in ACC play. But if you dive deep, they're -7 in turnovers, and a lot of them are fumbles. This isn't even necessarily Malik Cunningham. If they could just hold on to the ball, Steve, I think they can keep it inside of 17 in South Bend against Notre Dame. Tell me why I'm crazy. I like Louisville catching 16.5, 17 against the Irish.
I mentioned how Arkansas is the most improved team. Louisville's been my most disappointing team. I'm right with you. I love Satterfield as a coach, and this just doesn't make sense from what I've seen from a Satterfield team. I know Cunningham got banged up last week. He has not been smart with the ball. I liked what he did last year. Thought we would say, you know, take a next step. Those the receivers that he got are just awesome. Tutu Atwell's phenomenal. Running back Hawkins is great. Notre Dame is pretty fascinating to me because they – you know, everybody thought they would roll Duke in the first week, and you know, Duke kind of hung around. But they're starting to show the talent they got, the skill positions. And if Ian Book, I mean, I'm an Ian Book guy. I think he's great for what that situation is in Notre Dame. Tommy Tremble, the tight end for Notre Dame, is easily my favorite player in the country. He's just a battering ram that'll line up on any position on the field and just he's a headhunter, man. He's a throwback. He makes every block. He can run any route. He's an ultimate tight end that is awesome to watch. But look, you said it. Louisville has to keep the ball in their hands. You can't be giving the ball to these teams, especially when you're on the road and you're trying to pull an upset. You can't give the other team possessions. It's just, it is a lot. The problem with me also is Louisville's defense has just not been good. Last week was really the eye opener. I knew Miami had something offensively when they gashed them, but last week, I mean, Georgia Tech has been not good offensively, and they did what they wanted to Louisville. So I would tread lightly there. That's a lot of points, and you're getting a well-coached team. So, but I just Notre Dame has that switch, I think, that and their defense doesn't get talked up enough. So be careful there. But I like you taking the dog in the points. I do.
You might have just talked me out of it, so I appreciate the opinion. Speaking of lack of offense, my man Leach, bro, like – I've been fired up for Leach to go to the SEC. I've been banging that drum for a while, and I'm, like, taking a victory lap after LSU. Like, see? Told you. And it's gone the other way the last 2 weeks. I believe a combined 10 interceptions between Mississippi State quarterbacks in the last 2 weeks. As the best Kellermann played, is there any chance Mississippi State can pull the upset here against an A&M team coming in riding sky high?
Well, Bear and I, on our podcast this week, Dusty, we started the podcast with there's six, I think it's six games. Actually, one of them's gone now because Cincinnati got postponed. There were six games that had ranked teams on the road, given like short numbers, not a lot of points. And I always say those lines reek. They smell as bad as you can, and they oftentimes scare me away. Like A&M's coming off of really maybe one of the most impressive wins we've seen this year, and then they're only giving a couple points to a team that could not have looked worse the last 2 weeks in Mississippi State after, you know, beating LSU the week one where everybody, you know, thought the world was, you know, getting flipped upside down because we thought LSU was good. I will say that I'm a Stanford guy. I watched KJ Costello at Stanford, and he won a lot of good football games for Stanford. I've never seen him look like he did last week in Lexington. He was spooked, man. There were sometimes he was just throwing the ball blind in the flat, not reading anything. He was looking over his shoulder for backside pressures. Like, it was something I hadn't, and he's a really, really confident dude. And I go back to that Wazoo and that Leach system. When they played against guys that had, you know, teams that had a defensive line that could get after your butt, they oftentimes struggled. And there is no protection. There's no extra layer for that quarterback in that offense if they are not smart with the football. We've seen it been good. Minshew was awesome. Luke Falk had a couple, you know, a run there. But if you're not smart with the football, with all that scat protection and everybody going out and leaking out into the flats and flooding zones like they what they like to try and do offensively, you have to be smart. You're going to get, you know, you're going to get your head taken off. And I think KJ got a little stubborn last year, so I do not like what I see. And also, too, with the Leach system, what always scared me about going to the SEC is, and you do games every week, you see this, is the hybrid guys. Mm-hmm. You know, in the Pac-12 and the Big 12, you don't really see those guys in the secondary. Yo, you have nickel dime guys. In the SEC, there's a lot of these hybrid guys that just stay on the field, first down, second down, third down. And those are mostly the best athletes on the field. So I think there's some getting used to as to how they can attack those guys and those guys that do different schemes in that league. So I would be careful. Jimbo's got to be sky high. You know, after that big win, they needed that bad, but the line doesn't make sense. So I'm not touching that game.
I think that's great analysis. I wish that Tulsa-Cincinnati game was happening. I thought Tulsa was a live dog. I had Cincinnati a couple of weeks ago against Army. There's a lot to like with Cincinnati, but the quarterback to me is too inconsistent. Yep. I thought that was a spot where Tulsa could maybe pull the upset with as well as they've played. I want to push people to your podcast because you and Bear do a fantastic job. Check out the Stanford Steve and Bear podcast. They break down the games. Can you give my listeners, though, if they don't get a chance to make it, maybe – one of your plays that you like this week, a pick that you feel really good about heading into the weekend?
We've been on it since the beginning of the season, Dusty, all right? So don't laugh. And there's zero analysis. We are taking West Virginia, and that's just because who the opponent is. We've been against Kansas every week this year, and it's worked out phenomenally. So we're going to lay the 22 with the Mountaineers. We don't like what we've seen from the boys in Lawrence, Kansas, so far this year. So I don't think they can compete. And I really like what I've seen from West Virginia. They had a winnable game in Stillwater a couple weeks ago. I like what they have on the D line, which you can't really say a lot about in the Big 12. But I like what Neil's doing there, and I think they're coming a week off. I think they'll be ready to get after Kansas.
Steve, if I'm lying, I'm dying. I also work with Danny Cannell on Sirius XM 84 on Tuesday mornings, and we have what we call Spread Alert, and that was one of my favorite games. And I said, it's simply because I'm going to fade Kansas for the rest of the year. I mean, I think that they are that bad last year, so I'm glad to know that we share the same brain as relates to the Kansas Jayhawks. Steve, an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your debut on the show. Hopefully we can get you again to break down some college football. Thanks for all you do for us in the evenings with sports, making it fun, keeping it light, and even offering up some fantastic gambling tips for all of us at home as well. Thanks, brother.
Anything, anytime for you, Dusty. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, there you go. Stanford Steve, the SVP Sports Center Show. Also check out their podcast. It's him and the Bear, Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. That was right out of the chute. Whoo! Matt Ravis back in studio. Hello, Matthew.
Hello. Hello, hello.
I think we have Matt.
Can you hear me?
Possibly. Do you even have me anymore?
Dusty, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely.
I was just saying, whoo, big exhale there. That was, you know, bringing a guest from going from Todd Furman to straight to Stanford Steve. I had to just get a breath and say hello to you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Doing better now that you can hear me. Yeah, I've been doing excellent. Thanks for asking.
I'll be honest. Some of the COVID-related issues have put at least a little bit of damper on my weekend, but I think after talking to Todd Furman, after talking to Stanford Steve, I'm back up and ready, fired up for the festivities in football coming up this weekend. We'll continue to break it down. We still have Tom Luganville at one, who was supposed to be on the call for Tulsa-Cincinnati, that, as we found out this morning, ain't happening. Cincinnati not going to be able to make it. COVID-related issues, yet another postponement. And college football, another postponement for the Tulsa Golden Hurricane. Also, news coming down earlier today about Daryl Morey no longer with the Houston Rockets. I'm going to step aside when we get back, and I'm going to let Matt Ravis go to town. He's got big opinions, big thoughts, and we can't wait to hear them. Also, we'd love to hear from you. You want to chime in on any of this? feel free to do so. 460-9957. We are just getting started on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. Come back. It is the Monsters of the Midday.
Breaking sports news happens here. 2-0.
A little bit of last night. Astros survive and advance. They win 4-3 last night over the Rays. Push this at least to a fifth game coming up later on this afternoon. I'd probably expected, right? The Astros weren't going to go out without a fight. Matt and Zach Greinke was he was fantastic on the bump last night.
Yes, he was. I do expect the Rays to dispatch the Astros today, though. I would expect them to get that done. Get that finished up today.
Give me a little bit from the first inning from the other game, a record-setting first inning for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Swing and a ball hammered center field. Pache on the move. Turning and looking, and it's gone into the bullpen and out of here. Jock Peterson hits a homer to left center. He didn't miss that one, and the Dodgers unloading. It is 5-0 in the first.
They were just getting started after the Jock Peterson home run. The Max Muncy grand slam capped off the 11-run first inning. A little bit of a super flex from the L.A. Dodgers. And I think that they just reminded everybody that they're not going away without a fight. And setting up for a pivotal game four coming up tonight with Clayton Kershaw on the mound. Just a huge game. I mean, huge first inning last night from the Dodgers, Matt. And then, I mean, probably one of the bigger, more important starts of Clayton Kershaw's career.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Did I hear correctly that Mark Rogers is going to be in attendance for this one?
I think he's leaving the show and heading down.
Wow. So that'll be, that'll certainly be a good time for him. Yeah, no, Kershaw's got to step up. Well, we all, if you're a baseball fan, you know that he has had his postseason struggles. So it's a huge start tonight.
Yeah. And, I mean, just huge for this Dodgers team. And trying to get back in this series. Last night was a step in the right direction, but I think tonight is the pivotal game of the series. You feel really good if you're a Dodgers fan, if they can get this thing knotted up at two. But 11 runs in the first inning? Holy cow. That was quite the display of hitting last night for the Dodgers. Picked up right where they left off in the ninth in game two.
It's wild to be an Atlanta sports fan, right? It's lots of extremes. It's all over the place.
Yeah, no doubt.
Either a lot... You know, ahead by a bunch of points, and then you give up the lead, or you're behind by a bunch, and you don't come back. It's hard to be an Atlanta fan.
And right now, you might not have to be a fan this week because they paused all football activities yesterday.
That's true. That might be a relief, having a week off from Falcons football.
Oh, man. I feel for the Atlanta Falcons fans. It's been a wild ride so far here early on in the NFL season. But these Braves fans, they still got to feel pretty good about where they're at. They still have a 2-1 lead. Huge game tonight that, as you mentioned, Mark Rogers will be in attendance there in Arlington at Globe Life Park. Okay, big news came out of the NBA, and it had your ears perked up. And Daryl Morey out after 13 years making business decisions, basketball decisions, for the Houston Rockets. Matt Ravis, your initial reaction to this big news coming out of Houston?
I watched the movie Moneyball last night, Dusty. I'm sure you've seen that, right? Moneyball.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great movie. That was probably pretty appropriate, right? Maybe that was a little bit of an omen of what was to come. As Daryl Morey certainly is in the vein of that. It was pretty surprising, especially in the middle of a coaching search. One theory, and I heard you float this, was that maybe this isn't exactly Daryl Morey stepping down. It's Tillman Fertitta pushing him on the way out. I like that. I've got another theory.
Okay.
I think that if you know about Tillman Fertitta, the Rockets owner, you know he is in the casino business, he's in the restaurant business, two businesses that, goes without saying, those have been hit pretty hard this year. I don't know, that makes me think maybe he wasn't willing to pony up what it took for a suitable head coach, a Ty Lue, a Jeff Van Gundy, and maybe Daryl Morey really did want to step down. That was one thought I had. I think both are possible.
I think that it could be a combination of all that.
Sure.
Right? I mean,
sure.
I think that based off of Tillman for now, Mark had a great stat earlier that whenever he said this, again, I'm sure it's right, but he said that Fertitta took out a $300 million loan at 13% to try to save his restaurant empire. I mean, so that would just tell me, kind of to your point, you know, he's kind of falling on some hard times right now. And so maybe he's looking to cut costs at every single corner. And, you know, whether that's head coach, overall roster, whatever it may be, maybe some of those decisions don't exactly jive with the outlook that Daryl Morey has. I also think, too, just when you look at this franchise, I think it's safe to say that Tillman Fertitta spit a butt. I mean, he hasn't been afraid to back Daryl Morey, and this year they're going to get into the luxury tax. And the fact that they weren't making steps in the right direction, he is a pretty prideful guy. He's been outspoken about wanting to win a world championship. You know, maybe he doesn't feel that they're heading in the right direction right now, especially when it comes at a premium from a cost standpoint. So, yeah. I don't know. I think there's probably several things at play here.
Sure. I think that's right. I will say this, too. I think Daryl Morey is a very good GM. I think that he is one of the better GMs in the league. He certainly knows how to manage assets, trade for James Harden. Talk about, you know, the guy who traded up from a paperclip to a house. That is what Daryl Morey did with James Harden, just stacking up assets and was able to go and trade for a franchise cornerstone, one of the best offensive players of all time. And they haven't had much to show for that in the way of rings, but Dusty, I mean, they've been a mainstay in the playoffs. They've been in the Western Conference Finals, I think, four times in the last 8 years. Daryl Morey's done a good job with that roster. So I don't think his performance is necessarily why he got bounced. And I'd be interested to see who they bring in from a competitive standpoint, because I think you're going to have to do some overhauling, right? You lose your coach, you lose your GM, you lose your whole identity, your whole culture, your whole philosophy. So I think this benefits the Thunder, Dusty. Pick swap coming up in 2021. That's good news for Thunder fans.
So Daryl Morey, since he's been there in 2007, they made 77 trades.
Wow.
77 trades.
That's like me in fantasy football.
Do you know that that's only the second most trades made by a franchise? Do you know who's made the most?
Probably be a place where Daryl Morey knows very well. Place where he came from, right? Philly?
It's correct. 78 trades made in Philly. I've always liked Daryl Morey. He takes a lot of shots from a lot of people, but I like his brashness. I like the fact that he's not afraid to make a deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I would agree with you. I'm kind of team Daryl Morey. I like him.
He's kind of Sam Presti's evil twin. They're very similar, except in the fact that Sam Presti is very much, he likes to be in the shadows. Whereas Daryl Morey, I mean, he'll hop on the Bill Simmons podcast. He doesn't care. He'll get on there and speak his, you know, speak his heart.
He's his evil twin if that means that they look nothing alike and act nothing alike. Because to your
but
point...
From a basketball standpoint, they're very similar. But anyway.
From a basketball standpoint, I guess you could say that. But that's kind of where it stops, right? And I think it's safe to say that there are some twins that look completely different. And they act completely different, right? But they're cut from the same cloth. And maybe that's could be Daryl Morey and Sam Presti. Where does he end up?
Man, that's a good question. That's a good question. I think a few teams probably reconsidering their GM moves. It's late, right? It's late. He's going to have to sign on, I would imagine. And it looks like, too, he's going to stay on an advisory role, right, to help them hire a head coach. So I don't know that he's in a big hurry. He might sit out for a year, Dusty, and wait for another job to open up. That's probably what I would guess would happen.
I want to see more information on this, because it does seem like, you know, just when you talk about the amount of loan that Tillman Fertitta took out at that interest rate.
And it's 15%. I looked it up. It's 15%.
15%. My gosh. You have to really wonder. Maybe this wasn't a forcing him out. Maybe this is just more about Tillman Fertitta is about to be slashing costs, and he's about to get in cost-cutting mode big time. And to your point, Daryl Morey sees the writing on the wall, so he's just going to sidestep. Because as I read here, he signed a 5-year extension in 19.
He did. That's right.
Why would he walk away from that, though? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it kind of makes me wonder a couple things. Just how bad is that relationship there? Because that would mean there should be 3 years left on this deal. Why would you walk away from that money that you have as a GM unless there was some bad blood there between owner and GM, which I don't know necessarily if there has been, or if you've got something else in the works? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm curious about Philly, Dusty. I mean, he came from there. He was under Sam Hinkie, the guy who was the architect of the process. That's where he came from. He's his protege. So, I don't know. I'm very interested to see. Maybe he replaces Elton Brand. I know a lot of Philly fans aren't very happy with Elton Brand's performance as the GM.
Yeah, it was big news coming out of the NBA world.
One last thing, Dusty, I wanted to say about this. Yeah. I think everybody on the Rockets is on the trade block. I mean, I don't think there's anybody who's untouchable, including James Harden. I think everybody's on the trade block. For the right deal, it's got to be the right deal, obviously.
I mean, if you trade the beard, I mean, it's reset button, right?
Yes,
I mean, it is a complete tear down and rebuild, which, to your point earlier, I think you kind of have to root for if you're a Thunder fan, right? I mean,
yes.
It couldn't work out any better than that. I think James Harden is tradable for sure. I don't know how tradable Russell Westbrook is, and maybe I'm just being a little bit too harsh, but the 3 years he has left, what is owed to him? And again, what I still don't know either, I mentioned this to Mark, what is all this lack of revenue going to do with, you know, with the luxury tax, with all the different things that go with that, with the salary cap moving forward? How much is that going to change things? And only because if it comes backwards, that's going to make this year's offseason acquisitions, what these contracts looks like, very fascinating. And it's going to make bad deals like Russell Westbrook's that much more of a poison pill. I said this back in the 11 o'clock hour, but I really believe it. I mean, we still don't even know exactly what the trickle-down effect from a lot of these lost revenues and potential future lost revenues, what that's going to do and impact salary cap and luxury tax, and ultimately how teams put together rosters.
The league's in a tough spot, Dusty. I'm sure you've seen the ratings for the NBA, just like everything else, not looking great. And obviously loss of revenue. I think it was 40% coming from fans and in-game merchandise and that sort of thing. So, yeah, certainly. And it's just it's a huge unknown. That's the biggest thing going forward. If you know what it was going to be, you could at least plan for that. But nobody knows. And that's going to make teams a little bit more hesitant, to your point, Dusty.
It's a trade for, I mean, Russell Westbrook, right? I mean,
well, that could be the worst contract in the NBA by the time it's all said and done.
And
it's going to be up there.
I think Mark was saying earlier that, you know, the Knicks, he's rumored to, you know, maybe a Knicks potential deal. And I'd read a few things on that. And I'm not saying that won't happen, but I mean, I don't have to spell it out for people around here to know kind of what's due, but if you'd like me to remind you, 41.3 next year, 44.2 the following year, and $47 million after that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how many general managers are going to want to step up and sign off on that. But, hey, you never know. I'm sure a lot of people didn't think that Russell Westbrook's contract was tradable in the first place, and he got shipped to Houston, so we'll see if the next general manager front office in Houston can potentially do the same thing. But of all the things I expected to see, which we should just expect the unexpected,
right?
Daryl Morey stepping down from the Houston Rockets just wasn't one of them, but just add it to the list of a weird, wild 2020, and it's touching pretty much every aspect of the sports world, especially the college football world. Oh, man, we got a lot to unpack because as we saw to start the week, a lot of postponements. Those have not stopped, impacting the state heavily, and the biggest game of the year to date, extremely impacted with potentially Nick Saban not being on the sidelines. We'll break it all down and much, much more. Tom Luganville will join the show at 1 o'clock. Want to get into some fantasy football because we don't have football town this Thursday. But I woke up this morning, and that's all my kids wanted to talk to me about from the moment I woke up. Dad, who should I pick up? What's going on in my fantasy? If my 8 and my 11-year-old are thinking about it that much, then I'm sure you at home are too. So I want to spend some time at some point in the 1 o'clock hour talking about some fantasy football. Back to the world of college football. When we return, don't go anywhere. Keep it here on the Monsters of the Midday.
Your source for totals.
Aren't his videos, right? People
no.
send him videos,
no.
and then he uses his platform to get them out, right?
Yes,
like
he's
a middleman.
He is an aggregator. That's what he is.
Okay, well, he aggregated that. Whenever it got my attention, it was already like 3.3 million views. But he posted like a 50-second clip of this guy who was on a walk, and he was being stalked by a mountain lion. And I want to give a shout-out to some of the listeners because the only reason I even saw it is some of our listeners tagged us in it because, obviously, the mountain lion rocking a stick has been an ongoing conversation about to wrap up my 6 year here at the Sports Animal on the Monsters of the Midday, and I think it's been going almost 6 years. It goes all the way back to my time with the Chicago Bears. But, man, that video was crazy, right? I mean, that guy's just going for a stroll in Provo, Utah, and this cat was, like, legit stalking him and, like, hissing at him, jumping up, swinging paws at him, like, and this guy's, like, videoing, walking backwards. What if you slip and fall? You trip on a rock walking backwards while you're videoing. That was wild. I guess it wasn't on the video Chapman played. You could watch the full six-minute video that he took. But he finally, I'm watching that video thinking, throw some rocks at that thing, dude. Like I told you, find a stick and throw some rocks. And eventually, you know what he did, Matt? He started throwing rocks at the cat, and the cat ran away. So I kind of still stand convicted that as long as I had a stick and a rock, I'd be able to walk away from that encounter, as
right.
did
right.
the man with the camera. But I'm going to tell you what, I would have needed some new underwear because that would have scared the hell out of me. I can promise you that. I would have.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine that? Being that guy going on that little walk on the path in Provo, Utah, and next thing you know, you got to look to be an 80 to 100 pound mountain lion coming after you and look like he's ready and means business?
I'll tell you what, the first thing I would have done is not to pull out my phone and start recording it. That's probably not what I would have done, but hey, we wouldn't be talking about it if he hadn't done that. And clearly, she was protecting her babies, right? Clearly, that's what she was doing.
Is that what that was?
She wasn't, because if you're prey, you probably don't even know, right? They're stalking you. But I think she was just trying to scare him off.
Well,
I've watched Planet Earth enough times to at least have a little bit of knowledge of this.
So you're saying if that cat wanted to take out that man, it would have happened and he would have never even known about it?
Probably so, right? Because they usually, at least that's the goal of stalking somebody and making them your prey.
I can tell you this, that cat was letting that man know he needed to get the heck away.
Yeah.
And he did accordingly.
But scary spot to be in because there's a communication barrier. That cat doesn't know what you're saying.
That cat has no clue what you're saying. That's right.
The way he was talking to it, I don't know what else you do at that point.
They don't speak the same language. But it was some fantastic video. If you get a chance, check it out. I give a lot of credit. That guy's got some stones on him, man. To have that cat in a bad mood, hissing, swatting, batting at you, and you just continue to keep videoing, that's hey, man, take some stones. And now that video is clearly, it's made its way around everywhere in the world of social media. We knew, Matt, we talked about the Florida situation together since Tuesday. I mean, to watch that whole thing play out was just wild in real time. From where it went Monday, playing the audio Tuesday, to where it ended yesterday, unfortunately postponing that game. Then yesterday, the news comes out. After we get off the show, I don't know if you were still on the show, but then Nick Saban tests positive for COVID-19. I've reached out to some people pretty close to the Alabama program. I don't think, as of now, they haven't seen a bunch of positives from players or other coaches. So that's a good thing for their program. I know Coach Saban had said that he has been asymptomatic. I'm sure he's going to try to take some more tests to see if they come up negative. I guess after you test positive, if you can have three negative tests, Matt, essentially that would override that positive. They would essentially, the way I read it, call that a false positive, and that's for players and coaches in the SEC. They could come back. I'm not anticipating that, but that is still a possibility. We can't say it's a foregone conclusion. Nick Saban is out, but for all practical purposes, he won't be on the sidelines. I still can't make my mind up how I feel about what the impact is going to be in game. Because, like Stanford Steve said, you know, earlier in the hour, he's got his hands on everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, some coaches are just like a figurehead, right? Some coaches, they delegate. Let their coaches do the work. They're the figurehead. They deal with all the outside of football stuff. When it comes to football, you know, they may have dipped their toe in the water a little bit, but for the most part, they're standoffish. Nick Saban, from what I've been told, whether it be people that have coached with him, that have played for him, from the time, no matter where he's been, he's in the middle of everything. Every decision, major, minor, you name it, he's signing off on it. Like, he oversees and has final say on everything that happens in that program, and he wants it that way. So when you remove that, like, again, the Alabama train, the way they've recruited, the mindset they have, all those things, you know, I don't think that changes. What I'm talking about is actual in-game decision-making, Matt. It's a massive game, man. It's a really good Georgia football team. Kirby Smart at Georgia has played Alabama twice, once in the Natty, once in the SEC title game. Both games he had double-digit leads, wasn't able to win. Is it – and you could easily make the case, if you go back and look at those games, it was a Nick Saban decision to switch quarterbacks in the national championship that ultimately might have won that game. And it might have been a Kirby Smart decision to fake that punt to Justin Fields in the SEC title game that cost him that. So I could make the case that the last two times these teams have matched up, coaching decisions, big coaching decisions, might have impacted the outcome of the game. And now with Nick Saban not being there, it's hard for me to – you know, try to predict exactly what the ramifications might be. I still think Alabama's got the better roster. I want to say I still back Alabama, but I don't know, man. It's got me thinking a lot.
Yeah, no, it's, man, that will be very interesting. What is Saban, 21-0 versus former assistants, right?
He's still yet to be beaten.
Still yet to be beaten. Average score is 42-17, Dusty. I don't know if this would count in that.
That's what I was going to say. Does this count? Would there be an asterisk by this?
I would guess
if he loses.
I would guess it would not if he does not. If he's not the head coach, I would guess it does not count.
I don't know. It's still going to be a fantastic game. I can't wait to see exactly how it unfolds. I haven't decided if it's going to be my picks tomorrow. I typically, when there's a big game, I like to pick it because then I'm at least somewhat invested, not financially, but at least somewhat emotionally, because I want my picks to hit. I want to be giving out good info to our great listeners, so I'm on the fence right now. If none of this news would have came out, I was going to take Bama all the way up until 7. If it got to 7, I probably would have shied away, but anything 6.5 or under, I was going to back Bama. Now I'm kind of, I don't quite know. Other big news of the day in college football. One of the other big games of the weekend. I thought Tulsa, I was ready to, that was going to be one of my picks too. I was taking Tulsa plus the points with a chance for the upset. That game has been postponed as of this morning. Cincinnati having too many positive COVID-19 cases. They're quarantining their athletes, and they have rescheduled that game for December the 5th. The man that was going to be on the call that game had done all the prep work, Tom Luganbill. He will join me to talk about that and all things around the world of college football next, right here on the Monsters of the Midday.
Sports Animal Flashback.
College football today, and let's continue the conversation. I had booked our next guest, Tom Luganbill, college football analyst, a couple days ago because I was fired up. He was getting ready to do a big game, Tulsa against number 8 Cincinnati. As of this morning, that game has been postponed, but we appreciate Tom for still hopping on. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'll tell you what, I've had 2 Tulsa games canceled. I've never known so much about one football team that I've never broadcasted a game for in my life.
Welcome to 2020, right? That's kind of the nature
exactly.
of the beast. You know, what do you think of Tulsa? Just tell me, you've done all the work, so give me a breakdown. I mean, I thought Tulsa had a chance to win this game. I was impressed with the way they played against Oklahoma State, really impressed with them going to Orlando and beating a good UCF team. And I thought this was a winnable game potentially for our Tulsa fans here in the state. What's your outlook for them in the American moving forward if they actually get a chance to play a formidable schedule?
Well, I'll tell you, I think they're really good on defense. And I think that's what gives them a chance each and every week. They're back end. They have Power 5 looking athletes, 6'2 corners, 6'3 safeties. Zaven Collins, the linebacker that they kind of move all over the place. He was a former defensive lineman. They do some really unique things with their odd front and are very difficult to prepare for. And listen, had that game been played this weekend, this would be the third time in a row that Tulsa was tasked with playing a team ranked in the top 11. So they're battle tested. And I do have concerns about Zach Smith's consistency, particularly when it comes to overall accuracy. Now, he got really hot in the last 2 minutes of the first half versus UCF and then carried it over into the second half. And, you know, he looked like an entirely different player. But there's no question in my mind that their hopes will ride on his consistency. Their defense is going to give them a chance against every opponent. And I've seen Memphis now. I've seen SMU against every opponent in that league. Tulsa's going to be in every game. If the quarterback plays well, I think Phillip Montgomery's got himself a really good football team on his hands.
I think you're exactly right. I love watching Zaven Collins. By the way, eight-man football, Tom, eight-man football. And his dad played at Oklahoma State. They did not offer him. So I think he plays a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and through two games this year, he's been fantastic. I've even said he might be the best defensive player in the state, and it's not at Oklahoma or Oklahoma State. It's there at Tulsa. As I'm looking at my screen here, three top 10 games postponed. Yours is one of them. Another's here in the state, Oklahoma State, and then LSU, Florida. I'm trying to still stay positive because we're still going to have a lot of college football games coming up this week. But then the news with Nick Saban, are you worried at all? Or we all expected disruptions, but anything about this week? Also, Missouri Vanderbilt has been postponed. Are you concerned? Or what's the overall outlook for these postponements that you see continue to stack up seemingly week after week?
Well, you know, you've been out broadcasting games, as have I, and we've all talked with coaching staffs, and I don't know how you feel, but it's become very, very apparent that it's not the positive COVID test. It's the contact tracing that goes along with it is what gets you. So you might have very few positives, one here, one there, but if seven other people were impacted, they're treating that person like he's positive, even if they've tested negative. And that is what's concerning, because you're holding your breath three times a week for that next day to get that text, to get that email, to get that call from your trainer and your staff to say, okay, we're clear, we're good. You know, listen, I talked to Cincinnati coaches yesterday. They had no idea this was coming. They were getting on a plane and getting ready to roll, and bam, they get results back. And it can decimate certain position groups. And I think that's the biggest concern. And you know, listen, with what we've seen in the Big 12, what we've seen at the Group of Five level really is where it's been hit the most. And then now we're seeing it a bit in the SEC. This is why I've had such an issue with the Big 10, Dusty, because I think what they've put forth is a total sham, and it's a way for them to fall back and say, well, we told you so. How in the world are they expecting their teams to play eight or nine straight weeks without any makeup dates and an added week onto the quarantine period? There's no way that's going to happen. And I don't understand why everybody, and I credit the players, I credit the coaches, the support staff. They made this happen. The parents of players made this happen, and I love it, man. I want the Big Ten on the field. I want the Pac-12 on the field. But under the parameters that the Big Ten set forth, what we're already seeing in the last 5 to 6 weeks, there's no way the Big Ten's going to be able to pull this off.
Seems like it's going to be impossible at this point, which has kind of got me wondering. I've been on text with a couple of our coworkers that cover college football, and I'm starting to wonder this, Tom, and I haven't even mentioned this on the air yet today, but I'll throw it out to you.
Okay.
Is there a chance that we're going to see, because everybody's pushing to that December 5th or December 12th, well, we're about to start running out of days you can push to. Is there a chance we see this entire season pushed into 2021 to get it completed properly?
I don't think it's out of consideration. In fact, I don't think anything's off the table in the current climate that we're in. There's got to be creative and innovative ways, and there's going to have to be people that are willing to bend and do things that they wouldn't normally want to do. That's whether it's presidents, ADs, administrators, coaches, players, everybody involved, broadcasting, all of it. I mean, our world has changed dramatically. And so I think if that's what needs to happen to complete it, and it allows for maybe the Big Ten and the Pac-12 that haven't made it easy for their teams to meet their standard, then, listen, I'm all for it. We're already going to have a super long season. I mean, I had a game on week zero. So, I mean, I feel I'm 5 to 6 weeks in. Some people are 2 to 3 weeks in, and whether you're a team or a broadcaster. So I don't think you're way out of your tree there in any way, shape, or form. I think we are in a realm of uncertainty never before seen, not only in our society, but certainly as it relates to the great sport of football. And I think everybody's just kind of trying to handle things week by week.
That's exactly right. And I think what you said is kind of where my mind's at. Nothing's off the table. And it seems that We have people that want to see this thing, you know, follow through with it, make it happen if you continue to do it safely. And I'm just saying, I don't know if we should necessarily put parameters or time restraints on when this season might conclude based off of what we're seeing with these postponements popping up seemingly week after week. We're talking with Tom Luginbill, ESPN college football analyst. I want to get a quick take you have on the two in-state schools. Oklahoma ekes out a victory that they had to have against Texas a week ago, hit a bye week this week, then go to Fort Worth next week. What do you think, Oklahoma, how much you think they can build upon that win that they had last week against Texas?
Well, I think first and foremost, it gives them a ton of confidence. And that's important, especially when you're playing with a young quarterback. And that's the thing I keep reiterating with people about Oklahoma this year and one of the reasons why they're going to be different. Those previous three dudes that they had under center had come into the program seasoned, experienced, had redshirted, had been around and played a lot of meaningful football. And everybody's asking this redshirt freshman to meet the same standard. And I think we've got to recognize that he's at a different developmental stage. He's only going to improve. He's only going to get better. And I don't think Oklahoma's been the team in the offensive line that they thought that they would be to this point. So I do think that you're going to see gradual progress as the quarterback continues to grow. I am of the belief, though, and I felt strongly about this last week as Miami was taking on Clemson, is when you have a game like that, when you get a momentum swing and you've got energy and enthusiasm within your program, sometimes it hurts you to have a bye. You know, you kind of want to hit the ground running and get right back and get rolling. And, you know, I think sometimes that can hinder your progress, but they're going to be fine. We're in a wacky year where I think there's a lot of top-to-bottom teams in a lot of leagues that are really, really similar to each other. And whoever can get to Saturday and have their best 11, 22, 44 that have been able to practice, that haven't been in quarantine, and you've been able to put your best team on the field on any given Saturday, they're going to have the best chance because you might not catch the same team each and every week. If an Oklahoma plays a TCU on 1 week and then plays a team that's missed 3 weeks because of COVID, that's a totally different set of circumstances than we normally have. So the goal is to get your best team on the playing field each week, and no matter how, you can come up with a way of doing it.
No doubt. And a team that's had to deal with all kinds of postponements, they're dealing with one this week and injuries, is Oklahoma State. They've only had their starting quarterback, Spencer Sanders, for one possession this season. And then Shane Illingworth's done a nice job filling in. But they did play Tulsa. I'm sure you watched that tape from the opener and improved a little against West Virginia and then obviously against Kansas. What's your outlook on them right now? And it seems as if next week against Iowa State, they should be getting Spencer Sanders back and hopefully healthy.
And that's exactly when they're going to need him because I think, you know, we had Shane in the Under Armour game last year and got to spend some time around him, but he doesn't bring that athletic element that Spencer does to be able to extend and create plays, get you out of trouble. And I think when you don't have that at the quarterback spot, then more of the focus goes on stopping the run game and stacking the box and saying, okay, we're not going to let you run it to beat us. We're going to make a true freshman beat us through the air. And so you're right. I think he's played very, very well given the set of circumstances. But Spencer just gives you that different dynamic. And when you're going to play against a team like Iowa State, I think what Iowa State does is what everybody's going to be emulating that's having to play against the spread, and that is keep the ball in front of you, tackle in space, and make you earn it, make you be patient on offense because they're not going to give up the big explosive play. That's how they're competing with everybody in that conference. They don't get into track meets. So if you're Oklahoma State, I think it's really important that the more athleticism you have at the quarterback, the more difficult Oklahoma State is to defend for Iowa State.
I'm totally with you. And I just can't wait to see what this offense looks like. Tylan Wallace looks like his old self. Chuba Hubbard's rounding into shape with LD Brown stepping up. I can't wait to see what a healthy Spencer Sanders can add to this offense. Okay, I've played some hits from Nick Saban so far today. I have not gotten your take on that. How much does his absence on the sidelines impact that game, in your opinion, Tom?
I think it impacts it because you now have somebody leading this charge who's a very good coach, who's been very, very successful in Steve Sarkisian, but he's also running a part of the football team. So what I think Nick Saban being absent, where it affects you the most is always having that person that maybe isn't, he's involved in all the areas, but he's not responsible for calling the defense or calling the offense. He's out there to manage the game, to make game management decisions, clock management, field position, all of these different things that you've got to prepare for when you have a change in leadership. And when that leadership isn't calling one side of the ball, they're obviously heavily involved in that part of it. I think it's important that they get Georgia at home. I think Stark will be just fine. Everybody in college football that I've talked to when we prepare for games has these contingency plans already in place. And I think the other thing that helps, Nick Saban notwithstanding, whether he's on the sideline or he's not on the sideline, Georgia's style of offense is what Alabama would prefer to defend. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see Alabama play lights out on defense, and it's going to be interesting with that suffocating defense Georgia has. It's going to be very interesting to see how they hold up versus that Alabama offense and those weapons, because nobody in college football has weapons like Alabama does, and Georgia hasn't seen that yet. So it's going to be interesting. But I do think the shift is more about game management and assignment on the sideline on behalf of the coaching staff when your head coach isn't there and he's not responsible for calling one side of the ball or the other.
You got a side, and I was about to say, does Kirby get his first win over Nick? I don't even know if we can actually count it as a win over Nick if he's on the sidelines, but I feel like what you said is right. Bama's defense is going to be the difference, and even with or without Nick Saban, I like the Tide to win.
Listen, I can't tell you how many radio shows I've done just this week alone, particularly in the Southeast, where you know the sky is falling in Tuscaloosa, and I'm like, guys, tap the brakes a little bit. We're not talking about an epidemic here. We're talking about one outing. And by the way, it's happened to him before. Clemson did that to him in the national championship game. Ole Miss did it to him with Chad Kelly. And Alabama lost that game. So it's not as if this hadn't happened. Start worrying if you start seeing that 3 or 4 weeks in a row. Then you got cause for worry. But it's been my experience with that program over the last 12, 13 years. When they get embarrassed or they do something that's uncharacteristic of their nature, the very next week they are hell on wheels. And I wouldn't expect anything less this week.
I'm totally with you. Last thing I got, I thought Miami could keep it close against Clemson. Boy, was I wrong. That was like a super flex. I mean, is anybody going to give them a game in the ACC this year? Can Notre Dame give them a game?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I've been doing a lot of ACC stuff lately, and the league's really good, Dusty. If the quarterback play is really good, you have kind of surprising teams that people didn't think would play as well as others. I have had Clemson. They are a cut above. They're a different animal athletically in terms of depth at the quarterback position, as we all know. In my opinion, my answer to the question that you asked always involved if a Notre Dame or North Carolina or somebody is going to beat them, they're going to have to play their best, and Clemson's going to have to help them. Clemson's going to have to do something out of character, you know, give up two explosive plays for a touchdown, you know, throw a pick six, something that they don't do while the other team's playing a perfect game. That's how Clemson can get beat.
Travis Etienne, I didn't know if he could get better. He's better than he was a year ago. That was one thing that's jumped off the page at me. He has just been fantastic, running the ball, catching the ball. Clemson, they are an absolute monster once again. Man, I appreciate it so much. Sorry that you're not doing a game. I'm not doing a game this week. But, hey, man, it's 2020, and, you know, I guess at this point we shouldn't be surprised with anything that happens each and every week. So hopefully next week we're back out there.
I'm going to spend the next few days boozing and tailgating in my driveway like normal fans.
You're going to have a full-blown tailgate in the driveway, huh? Just keep it right there at the house.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't ever get to enjoy college football as a fan, neither do you, so let's live it up this weekend, huh?
Hey, okay, cheers to that. I can get down with that 100%. Tom, thanks so much for the time. Fantastic stuff. He's Tom Luganville, ESPN college football analyst. Tailgating in the driveway. Matt Ravis, that's a topic that I think you can get down with.
I could think of a lot worse ways to spend a Saturday.
What about instead of the driveway, why not like the back patio?
You know what I mean? That works too if you got a nice back patio, sure.
Back patio, I mean, I guess I could call it a tailgate.
Sure.
I guess you're not quite the same, though, if you don't have You know,
it's about it's what you make it, Dusty. It's what you make it.
I can tell you this: I'm going to be watching a lot of football this weekend. That's 100% for certain. Will I be in my driveway? That I cannot guarantee, but I will be enjoying a full slate of college football and then definitely some NFL football coming up on Sunday as well. Fantasy football, it's on everyone's mind. We all play it. I suck at it right now, so I'm going to try to get some advice from you and try to pick apart the brain of one Ravis Island as it relates to fantasy football. We'll do that next on the Monsters of the Midday.
All things Oklahoma City Thunder back.
NFL fantasy football, I stink this year, Matt. I mean, it might be the worst team I've ever had. And unfortunately, I kind of knew it when I drafted my team. And I'm not like you and Mark. I don't have 75 teams. I don't play the weekly DraftKings. I kind of have, which on a year like this, I wish I would have more teams. Because
I respect that, though.
If you've got one that goes awry, you've got something else to fall back on. I got nothing. I just got a crap team. But I still enjoy the ins and outs of fantasy football, and my boys love it. I told you last year they played for the first time. They're so into it. Literally the first thing out of their mouth wasn't, good morning, Dad, how are you? You know, how you feeling? How'd you sleep? None of that. It's my son with an iPad going, Dad, should I pick this guy up in my tight end? Greg Olson's out this week.
That's
my
awesome.
8-year-old.
That's awesome.
It is part of it that is pretty awesome, not going to lie. So we were able to find him a tight end to put in his stead. But you're big into fantasy football. I mean, you have a show a lot of times. You focus a lot on fantasy. So you're the perfect guy to talk to here. Before we get into some of this for this week 6 outlook on the NFL fantasy football, one person that might be on the waiver wire people want to look at is the Cowboys quarterback, the one that will be stepping in for Dak Prescott. Before we go down that road, Dak Prescott had a few things to say, gave an update on his status. Here's the Cowboys starting quarterback after that gruesome ankle injury, fresh off of surgery.
What's up, everyone? Just want everyone to know that I'm doing well. And I can't thank you enough for all your love, your support, your prayers over the last few days. They've been more than overwhelming from teammates to family to friends to fans I don't know to former and current players around the league and players around all sports. I just wanted to say thank you. They're definitely appreciated and received well. So just knowing that I have that much love and support out there makes a huge difference. I'm in great spirits. Headed to see the doctor, headed to see my leg for the first time post-surgery. So just ready to start this road to comeback. I know this little adversity is just going to be another chapter in the book. And I'm excited to move forward and write it. Just once again, can't thank you all enough for your love and your support through it all. But I'm in great spirits. I'm going to stay that way. I'm looking forward to this football season, seeing the game in a different perspective, and supporting my teammates and those around the league that need it. And just excited for God's purpose and God's plan. I know it's bigger than anything that I see or that could have imagined, but I'm trusting him. My faith is doubled down more than ever, and I'm thankful that he's my savior and he guides me in life. So I know through him all this will be possible and all this will be a great comeback and a great story. So once again, thank you for your support. Thank you for your love. And ready to get this journey of the comeback started. So God bless you all. Thank you.
Dak Prescott, little video speaking publicly, I believe for the first time since the injury. Good to hear that he's in good spirits, and clearly, as he mentioned, the work is about to begin and his road to recovery and rehab. I know a lot of people point to the image of him, you know, tears in his eyes, holding up the fist and being carted off. I think whenever I think about that injury, Matt, I'm going to think about whenever he looked down, and it was almost as if he grabbed his ankle to try to fix it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like picked it up and then was like frustrated and kind of like slammed it. Yeah,
he was. It was like he wanted to be able to put it back in place. Like he looked down and was like, damn, it's not supposed to be that way. Here, can I just move it? And it's like he quickly realized, no, this is really bad. And I hate it because I've talked a lot about the contract side of things, and that's the business side. But I mean, I like Dak Prescott, and I hope he does come back from this injury better, stronger, and still able to be the same player he was with his mobility. I really hope that, and I think that, you know, that mindset, that optimistic positive mindset's only going to help him in trying to do that. But the football, as they say, the show must go on. And the Cowboys season will go on with Dak Prescott or without Dak Prescott. And it made me think, like, I don't know if Andy Dalton is a starter this week necessarily, but I don't think he's a bad guy to try to pick up off waivers right now, Matt.
No, because, no, I don't disagree.
I mean, again, I think that the offense is going to shift and really, you know, try to feed Zeke, just like his stomach says. And I think that they're going to try to rely on that run game. But I think you'd be remiss if you didn't recognize the weaponry that Andy Dalton has at his disposal. And I still think even if they get that running game going, there's going to be the play-action element of this offense. It's still going to be very much a viable option. This is arguably the best offense around Andy Dalton that he's maybe ever had in his career. It was a very small sample size, but he did go 9 of 11, 111 yards. He didn't have a touchdown, but putting the ball up, allowing playmakers to go make plays. Again, I don't think he's a starter this week, but he'd be someone that I'd be looking to grab and at least put on my bench as a potential starter for later down in the season.
Yeah, depending on my situation, maybe I do make him a starter this week because they've got a good matchup. They play the Cardinals, who have given up 250 yards and two touchdowns to the likes of Jimmy Garoppolo and Matt Stafford and Teddy Bridgewater. Now, I would give those guys a slight edge over Andy Dalton just because of what we've seen from them lately, but I don't think Andy Dalton's all that much worse than those guys, and he has better weapons than any of those three do. So I think he's very serviceable this week.
Yeah, I think, and especially throughout the course of the year, if you had Dak Prescott, if you've got a starter that, you know, kind of hit and miss, I don't know. I think Andy Dalton is at least worth a roll of the dice. I'll tell you, any matchups that really jump out to you for this week, I hate to say this, but I'm going to kind of ride the Ryan Fitzpatrick train. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure some people have him as a starter, especially after last week, but I would say that there's some leagues that you can probably pick up Ryan Fitzpatrick off the scrap heap, and it's as much about who he's playing against as anything else, Matt. I'm not saying he's going to duplicate exactly what he did with the over 99 QPR against the Niners, but they're playing the Jets. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is he's potentially a really good start this week against potentially the worst team in all of pro football.
Yeah, no, it's fire up anybody against the Jets, right? That would be that'd probably be a smart move. What might be Adam Gase's last game, although it feels like we've said that a whole bunch. No, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick's right in that same tier with Andy Dalton. I think I'd put them right shoulder to shoulder there.
Any? Give me a quarterback or someone at that position that you say stay away from, or you actually like the matchup this weekend?
I'll start with stay away from. Phillip Rivers and the Colts, Baker Mayfield and the Browns. If you're still starting those guys, they've been okay in real life, but not great fantasy options. I'll tell you a guy I really do like this week, and that's Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew has been very good. The total on that Jags-Lions game is 54. I think two pretty porous defenses there, so that should be a score fest. I think he'll end up being a top-10 quarterback this week.
So he's on my bench. Okay, he's my backup, and I've got Deshaun Watson. And it's funny you said that because I was thinking about, for the first time all year, starting Matthew Stafford this week. The Texans play the Titans. As you mentioned, the Lions play the Jags. And, you know, Stafford's actually been pretty good. He's just under 21 points a game in fantasy points. And the Jaguars' defense, they've allowed the fourth most passing yards, and opposing quarterbacks have completed almost 76% of their passes, Matt. Most in the NFL. I think you just convinced me. I think I'm going to go with Matthew Stafford this week for the first time.
Over Deshaun Watson?
It makes me nervous with the rushing element, but I don't know. I haven't even really thought about it all year. I've kind of just been Deshaun's my guy. And he had a good week last week. So maybe I'm jumping ship a little bit too soon, but the matchup alone it lends itself to tell me to go with Matthew Stafford here.
If I were you, I would probably still start Deshaun. I mean, there's a reason you've set and forget him. I mean, he is really good. But I don't think Stafford's a horrible play this week either. I'd still probably play Deshaun.
Okay. I'm with you on Baker. It's not a start this week. As we're getting closer to it, I saw that number is down to 3. It was at 3.5. I think it was all the way up at 4.5 to start. There's some money coming in on the Browns. As we get closer, I get more nervous for Baker Mayfield. That stat yesterday that Jake Trotter had about his fourth quarter QBR, that was staggering, was it not? How big he drops off at the end of the game.
Yep. Yep.
Makes me worry. I wouldn't start him in fantasy regardless, but overall in that game. Here's one for you, and I think you're going to disagree. I would be cautious about starting Teddy Bridgewater this week. And here's why. And I know he's had three straight 300-yard games. But the Bears' defense, they've allowed the second fewest fantasy points to any quarterback to quarterbacks this season. They've held four of the five quarterbacks its face to 14.5 fantasy points or less. And their completion percentage, the opposite end of the spectrum of the Jags, they're yielding an NFL-low 57.4 completion percentage. I know everybody's in love with Teddy Bridgewater. I just think that that's a bad matchup this week against my Bears.
I'll put it this way. I would start Teddy over a guy like Carson Wentz over Baker Mayfield we just talked about, but I would start Andy Dalton over Teddy Bridgewater this week. I really would. No, I think your line of thinking is good there. He's had several good weeks in a row, taking advantage of some good matchups, but you have to play the matchups. That's important.
Okay, what about Alexander Mattison? Do you think he's available in many fantasy leagues? Or you think people have already grabbed him?
I can tell you exactly how many fantasy leagues he's owned in, but I would imagine at this point, probably most people grabbed him off of waivers.
I would just think that he's a nice start this week against the Falcons.
I totally agree. He's good. He's talented. We've talked about him before on the show, haven't we? Alexander Mattison, yeah. Let's see, 44% of Yahoo leagues, 52% of ESPN leagues, so he's out there.
There's a 50-50 chance, basically, you can find him. So I would just say if you're looking for somebody... been so many injuries, so many people in and out of lineups. If you can grab Alexander Mattison, I think that's a good start this week against the Falcons defense and team. And I don't even know if that game happens. So maybe this isn't the best week. But I think even moving forward, depending on exactly what the outlook for Dalvin Cook is, I like the way Alexander Mattison runs, which is another reason why I was upset that the Vikings didn't go for it on fourth and short the other night. I thought that the way he was going, you give him the football.
As far as Dalvin Cook goes, hard to trust anything Mike Zimmer says, right? He's one of those guys who doesn't necessarily shoot straight when it comes to what he tells the media.
He's not going to give you the full story. I think that that's extremely safe to say. I'm going to tell you, man, one of the biggest things that's hurt me this year in fantasy, I drafted Kenyon Drake. What in the heck happened to him, man? He's not even the starter anymore.
No,
Edmonds is.
He's looked bad. Chase Edmonds has looked a lot better. And Kenyon Drake was able to get in the end zone last week, but I'm with you. I mean, he has not looked good. I would be looking to try to trade him and capitalize on that touchdown.
And I'm still waiting for Jonathan Taylor to break out. I think this could be a breakout game this week. Bengals defense has given up 131.4 yards a game to running backs at 5.3 a carry. I don't know. Jonathan Taylor has not feasted the way I thought that he would, but I think it's a pretty good matchup against the Bengals. I think he's a potentially a good start this week for like a running back number two or something if on your roster.
That's weird. It's weird that he hasn't broken in because I liked him, I think, just as much as you did going into the season out of Wisconsin. Great offensive line, obviously. Hard to figure out.
Okay. Running backs I would say if you have Melvin Gordon, you should probably look to replace him, right? I mean, I haven't seen exactly what the discipline's going to be for Melvin Gordon, but after the DUI on – was it yesterday, Wednesday, that surfaced? I would have to think that his status is going to be very much in question, right?
Yes, very much so. Philip Lindsay out there in 50% of Yahoo leagues, 35% of ESPN leagues. He's a guy who's talented. I like Philip Lindsay. Do you?
He's had a great start to his career. What, undrafted free agent, and he's done nothing. Well, didn't he start his career with a couple thousand-yard seasons? I mean, he's
really good.
He's been a nice player for them up until this point, which I think had some people kind of somewhat scratching their heads as to why they went and paid Melvin Gordon that money. I actually like the Melvin Gordon signing. It just hasn't – I don't know if it's necessarily panned out now, but especially with this DUI situation, you have to wonder how much he's going to find the field. Give me a wide receiver that I need to start this week, Matt. Who do you have your eye on wide receiver pass-catching-wise in Week 6 in the NFL?
Here's a guy you could probably grab off the waiver wire in some leagues. I mentioned that I like Gardner Minshew. Well, he's got to throw the ball to somebody. Laviska Shenault. He's been okay. Definitely a startable option. Rookie wide receiver for the Jaguars. I like him a lot.
I picked up Justin Jefferson a few weeks ago.
That's a good grab.
He's been a nice little find. You know what's interesting? Rookie receivers are having big years, man.
Yeah.
I think that, because we talked about this before the year, remember, about, you know, taking a little while. I think that that's starting to shift some.
Yeah,
when
no,
you go
it really
back
is.
When you go back to last year and you look at the success that the former Ole Miss receivers had, A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, and their rookie season. I think you could even look at Terry McLaurin, what he did when he was healthy last year in Washington. And CeeDee Lamb right now, he's sixth in the NFL in receiving. Seems like Justin Jefferson starting to take a little bit of shape. I saw Henry Ruggs had a big game last week against the Kansas City Chiefs, showing off that rookie speed. I don't know, man. The young wide receivers, even in their rookie or sophomore campaigns, seems like they're acclimating to the NFL game pretty seamlessly.
Yeah, that has been a recent trend. You're right, because it didn't used to be that way. That's that has been very interesting. I've got another wide receiver who's very surprising.
Please.
Robbie Anderson in Carolina.
Yes.
My goodness.
Where did he come from?
Just another example of a guy getting out from under Adam Gase, Dusty, and thriving. I mean, he has been Teddy Bridgewater's favorite target.
That seems to be a common theme these days. If you want your NFL career and productivity to go up, you want success, get away from Gase. That's served a lot of people extremely well. How about, and I'm sure you'd like to start him anytime, but Kenny Golladay this week against the Jaguars. We talked about that Jaguars defense. I mentioned Matthew Stafford, but I would say Kenny Golladay, he's going to have a chance to have a pretty big game on Sunday as well. I can't wait. He can put up some fantasy points, man. I hate to just point out obvious things. I think he's a must-start anytime he is in the lineup, but I would think that this week in particular, he's going to have a chance to put up some really big numbers. I think Davante Adams is going to start this week. That may slow down the Robert Tonyan train a little bit.
I think so. I've already capitalized on that in a couple of leagues, trying to trade Robert Tonyan.
Oh, you have? So knowing, anticipating, you, I guess you're selling high. Huh?
All I'm saying is the chances of him having another three-piece game are... I don't know. That's probably not going to happen again. Just the likelihood of that.
What I loved on that game was I had Aaron Jones and the guy I was playing had Robert Tonyan, and I needed a big game and Tonyan to do nothing, and Robert Tonyan goes for three tugs. He has been a nice addition to the Green Bay Packers. But, yeah, I would say Davante Adams. Again, nothing's been officially released, but he's back to practicing. He was making comments yesterday about that hamstring. I would expect in the big game against Tampa Bay, we see Davante Adams back on the field and this Green Bay Packers offense a little bit more at full strength. Not that they've needed him, because all Aaron Rodgers has done has been fantastic to this point. There you go. A little bit of fantasy football to get yourself ready for the upcoming weekend. Reminder, no Thursday night game tonight. We've got more Fun Belt, Sun Belt action with Georgia State and Arkansas State, 6:30 on ESPN. But the NFL game, I believe, was Kansas City-Buffalo, with the Buffalo Titans game being on Tuesday. They have pushed Kansas City-Buffalo to Monday night. So a double dip on Monday night with Chiefs and Bills. And then the late game, it is Kyler Murray and the Cardinals taking on the Dallas Cowboys. That line's gotten interesting, too. It's all the way down to 1.5, so some money coming in on the Cowboys. And it sounded like Todd Furman, I don't know if I was reading between the lines, sounded like he kind of thought the Cowboys still had a chance, even without Dak Prescott, to find a way to get a win. Big game for the Cards and a really big game for the Cowboys, trying to get themselves to 500. We've got an instrument in our house. I'll explain what I mean next.
Covering all four corners
on the NFL or college football slate. As you mentioned after we went to break, Matt, just hoping that the Atlanta Falcons, we will see if that game actually happens. They did pause football activities at their headquarters yesterday. But I only saw them say that there was one positive test, and that was someone in personnel, not necessarily a player, but they did pause football activities. So we will wait and see if they actually get a chance to play this upcoming weekend. When I was in school, Matt, back in the day, when I was in like middle school and elementary, I remember like there was band class and there was various things. And I remember my older brother, he played the trombone. And I remember as a kid thinking, man, I can't wait until I think it was like the sixth grade. I can't wait till I get in the sixth grade. I'm going to play the trombone. I'm going to be the best trombone player ever. Well, I got to the sixth grade, and I remember we kind of tried it out. Like, you get to try out a couple instruments. Like, I don't know. Don't know if I'm a trombone guy. Really, I'm not very musically inclined. I like to sing, but I can't sing well. And I've never just picked up an instrument and been good at it. So I've never put the time to get good at something. So I always appreciate and envy anybody who's got like a musical talent. Like if you can sing, you can play an instrument. Like I can't. It's not within my DNA. But there was a time when I was young when I thought, man, I want to play an instrument. That's where it's at. As I grew up, I quickly realized it's just not for me. I can't produce. I can't get it done. So I had kind of given up on that dream a long, long time ago. That dream is starting to be rekindled in my household, Matt Ravis, because my fifth grader, he has decided he wanted to play an instrument, and he has opted in to orchestra. Okay? So I don't know exactly what all the various instruments you can choose from in orchestra are. I'm sure they're pretty obvious. But we have a new instrument in our house.
Okay.
And my 11-year-old brought home, I believe it was Tuesday, a violin. So we now have a violin in our home. And my son is so excited, Matt. Like, he's fired up.
That's really cool.
It is really cool, but it's also extremely painful to listen to. So I'm at this very weird spot as a parent. You just have to continue to pat on the back, and you have to continue to encourage, right? Regardless of how god-awful the sound coming out of those violin strings are, you have to continue to build up his self-esteem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at what point do you finally did you get to that point where you say, okay, enough's enough, this ain't happening? I know we're not there yet, but I'm just starting to wonder because, I mean, he's talking to me about this is the first of his next violin. Like, I don't exactly know how far he wants to go into this thing, but, like, right now, I mean, he's so in. I think that his new outlook on life is to join the orchestra at some point. Again, we're a long way from that, but let's say he's like his father, and he's not that musically inclined. How long do you let it play? Because I'm going to tell you, man, a poorly played violin, it is not easy to take in for the ears. I'm just telling you, it's not.
I lived with somebody, had a roommate who was trying to take up the violin, so I know exactly what you're talking about. And that can be a little bit of a, it can be rough, man. The degree of difficulty on that instrument is high. I mean, you talk about a guitar, that might be like a 6 or 7 out of 10. Violin's got to be like a 9.5. There's no frets. No frets on that bad boy.
It's called the bow, right? Is that the thing that you strum across the strings?
That's right.
It's your bow?
That's your bow.
I mean, he loves to use that bow. I just don't know if he knows exactly what he's doing. So I'm in a bit of a caught between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah. I feel for your eardrums because that can be rough. And those things are loud. I mean, they make noise.
You're darn right they're loud.
They're
very
loud. And
it's 30 minutes of loudness right after school every day.
Yeah, that's really cool that he is that committed to it, though. Because as a middle schooler, I had a hard time applying myself to anything, Dusty. So that's very cool.
What about you? Are you have you ever played an instrument? I think you're a guitar player, right?
I do play
in a grinner.
Do play guitar, yes. Learned from my dad back whenever I was in middle school, actually, and I'm sure that my parents had to listen to a ton of, like, how many times can you hear Smoke on the Water over and over before you get sick of that song? Because that's the first song everybody learns how to play on guitar. It's the easiest one. So, I definitely went through that phase, although it's way easier than learning violin.
I think it just depends on how well you played the song, Matt. Because, again, if you play it well, I think it's pretty easy to listen to. If you absolutely butcher it and it makes your ears bleed, I think it becomes quite a bit tougher. So, how was your skill set? Did you give your parents something of quality to listen to?
It took several years before I rounded it for them. Several years.
Like, if we were gathered around a fire and somebody brought out an old six string, would you be able to strum and throw out some good sing-along songs?
I could play some songs, sure, whatever you wanted to. Absolutely.
That's awesome, man. That's a great talent to have. I mean, I've only got a couple of buddies that know how to play the guitar, and I can assure you, it comes in handy all the time. So the only problem I would say for you would be potentially once you're hanging around kind of the same crowd and they know that that's, you know, your role or one of your skills, you probably get asked to do it quite a bit.
No, that's in family too. Any sort of family gathering, they ask you to bring out the guitar. You're like, ugh, okay, I guess I will. I guess.
Matt can play that. Give him a guitar. He'll be good to go. And you get put on the spot quite a bit. All right, well, I'm going to continue to stay positive and be encouraging, but I think I've decided once the end of the fifth grade hits, if this thing hasn't really starting to round into shape, I don't know.
You may need to invest in some soundproofing. That may be a worthy thing.
That's a good point there. Some noise cancellation headphones that I just wear around the house at all times might be something extremely, extremely valuable in my upcoming future. I could get just like, I'll just get some earplugs and walk around as if I can't hear anything.
I didn't have the option to even play violin in middle school. That was never even given to me.
Nor me either. Again, it was like trombone. Maybe I want to say like you could do the trumpet, but really the only one that I remember that was open was the trombone.
Could go with the woodwinds or the brass, but not much anything else.
I'm kind of I thought that I really peaked when I played the xylophone. You know what I mean? That was really when I was at my best.
I love the xylophone.
The xylophone was right up my alley. I think that I quit playing that around the fourth and fifth grade. But that was me at my musical instrument height. Me in my fifth grade days of the xylophone. But that's just something we did in music, not something we actually took home. Now they send you home with it. You have to actually go pay for this thing, bring it home, and then we'll see. Hopefully, who knows, maybe my son's the next violinist that's going to be world-renowned, and he'll be playing in orchestras all over this country. But as of right now, he got a long way to go before we get there. I will do my best as a parent to be encouraging and be optimistic, much like we heard Dak Prescott being extremely positive and optimistic as he's working his way back from a gruesome ankle injury. All right, we'll see if we've got any more postponements before we get back tomorrow. I hope not. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your Thursday. We're taking a 21-hour break here on the Monsters of the Midday.
Sports Animal Flashback.